5% interest rates, that just happened. It's freak out time. That's today's show. Let's get to it. Hey everyone, I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Longtime real estate investors, and we kind of keep our eye to the news of the week and what's happening in the Wall Street and the real estate space. From time to time, we like to see some of the big stories. And we've got a big story about some of the movements in the interest rates, and this kind of just breaking news, I guess.
It is breaking news, right. So the news is that the new Fed chief has hinted that he does want to raise rates at least three times in 2018. So the stock market took a dive on that because the plan for the Fed has always been to increase rates this year. We didn't know it would be that drastic and that many times. And so, of course, what does that mean on a base level is that it's going to cost everybody more money to get money, right? So anytime you need money for something, it's going to cost you more because most loans are based on an index that is national. So there's this like average rate that people pay in interest. And then all of your loans are based on that. So whatever loans you've got now that are locked in, you're good, you're golden. But now when you're looking forward to getting new loans, you'll pay more for them. So what does that mean, Clayton?
Well, it means that, yeah, the cost of money, as Natalie pointed out, is more expensive now. And so that means that the retail buyer who we're at hit, you know, really heading right now into the spring buying season.
Yeah.
And this is when the hot housing market, right? April, May, this is when a lot of people list their houses. Right now, we're in the middle of a housing shortage. I just spoke to Brian Klein, who's a journalist in the real estate space. And he says, you know, we're still seeing a nationwide shortage on properties. We're seeing mortgage rates going up. That's just making it increasingly difficult for us to actually get, you know, get money into this, into the market and buy houses. So there's been a demand for houses. So we may see a bit of a stabilization, meaning because now it's going to be harder for someone to get money. We actually saw, I think, about 30% of people in a new survey said, look, because of this interest rate hike, that's going to keep me out of buying a house.
Right.
30%.
And I think
these are primary homeowners. I mean, these are, you know, people who are going to buy a home to live in.
And people are going to stay put more likely because A, I can't find a house, inventory's low. And B, if I move, I'm going to have to pay a lot more money to borrow the money to buy that house. So, of course, this hurts if you're thinking about your own home and hearth. But if you're an investor, that's not necessarily bad news. Why?
Well, if you're an investor, it's not bad news because that means it's more people still need to rent.
Right.
So if you're a person that, you know, has investment property that's renting it out to people that need investments or that need a place to live, guess what? If those people were thinking about purchasing a home and they were going to go through the mortgage route to purchase a home, and now they're looking at this saying, wow, I could have afforded it last year when it was at 4% or 3.5%. We just can't make it work at 5%. So we're going to have to continue to rent. Now, I'm not saying that's a great thing. Like, hey, we should all be, you know, jumping up and down, that's great for renters. But I also think that it's good for renters in the A class properties. So that, you know, that millennial home buyer who has a child or two, they're deciding, but maybe we're going to move out to the suburbs and buy that house. Now it looks like, no, maybe we're going to stay in the city. Maybe we're going to continue to rent for a while until maybe interest rates go down. But as you point out, according to the Fed chief, three interest rate hikes this year coming. And we knew this was coming, right? Mm-hmm. We knew this was coming because these rates have been artificially kept low by the Fed for a lot of years and try to stimulate the economy. More businesses could get loans, hire people.
Right.
And so some of that has really worked. Today's episode is brought to you by Pitney Bowes. You know this name. Pitney Bowes is the industry leader in mailing and shipping solutions. No matter what you send or how often you send it, Pitney Bowes has the perfect sending solution for your business. And I'm thrilled that Pitney Bowes is back as a sponsor because you guys responded the last time they were a sponsor here on the show. And a lot of you, you know, run a small business, do a lot of different mailing for your businesses, they're fantastic because they save you money. Bottom line, you can mail and you ship anytime from your home or your office. So you skip waiting line at the post office. I mean, anytime you have to go to the post office, it's the worst, right? So you can calculate and print exact postage. Never over or underpay right from your home. You can select options, allow you to compare and choose rates from three major shipping carriers so that you know that you're getting the lowest price.
So the best thing is, you know, you get the savings. Did you know that the United States Postal Service, the postage rates just went up in January? Yep, they just went up. So Pitney Bowes will save you 3 cents on every letter that you send. So that's direct savings. So you'll even get access to the United States Postal Service retail rate discounts of 39% off. So you're saving 39% off just from using them. So whether you're sending a letter or a package, you're going to save time and money with Pitney Bowes. Here's all you have to do. Plans starting at just $5 per month. And for our listeners, Pitney Bowes is offering a free trial. So you're sure to find the solution that's right for you and your business. All you have to do, check out their site to learn more. Visit pb.com/investing and try it free. Terms apply. You can see the site for details. That's pb.com/investing. And we thank Pitney Bowes for sponsoring this podcast. You guys have already saved our business a boatload of money. So thanks, Pitney Bowes.
Well, I sort of am of the mindset that all interest rates are a perversion. It's a way to manipulate a market in order to stimulate economic growth, but it's not based on like an algorithm of what the economy is actually doing, right? It's right. Economists' way to pervert and cause and effect. So
it used to be, though, going back historically, you know, the interest rate and then, of course, dealing with the gold standard, it used to. Now you're right. It's totally artificial.
Right. So, you know, if you've been playing the long game as an investor, you know that when interest rates are high, this is where you use your cash. Right. It's time to go shopping because the price of that product will fall because the seller of that product knows that it's going to cost you more money as the buyer to get that product, right? Like if I'm selling you this microphone and I know you need a loan for it because you don't have $10 in your pocket or whatever, it's not a $10 microphone, by the way.
Right.
We use much better equipment here.
This is a little travel microphone. Yeah, but yeah.
But I would know, right, that you were not going to have to pay at least 2% more for this out of your pocket. So I'm going to have to keep the price low. I cannot raise the price. Right? That's not really an option. So the price of goods will stabilize or go down because the lenders are making more. So, you know, that old saying, I think it's Robert Kiyosaki, I'm not sure that it is, but the investor saying is, when the going gets tough, the tough go shopping. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully you've been funneling a little bit extra, knowing that when an economy has a dip, you're going to swoop in and get the good deals, right? Distressed is when you get the good deals. So now is the time to see if you have cash. And if you don't, then you're going to have to evaluate your money deals a little bit harder.
Right. So again, I come back to, you know, there is good debt and there's bad debt. Mm-hmm. I just had a conversation with an investor this morning who was looking for like a bit of an investment strategy. And, you know, he's like, okay, so I'm getting this, you know, this is the debt service that I have on these properties, et cetera. And I said, look, that's great. If you're going to lend at 4% or 5% and you're making 8%, 9%, that's a nice differential. As my mentor, Robert Scheman, likes to say, if he's getting 11% interest from a loan and he's making 12%, he'll take it. Because then he's able to use that to his advantage. So,
plus that interest is performing on its own, right? Because it's a taxable deduction, because you can depreciate that asset. Like, there's all the ways that a debt on a performing asset is still performing. So that it's very different than just wanting to move your primary home and buy things that are not performing. So, of course, if you're trying to buy non-performing assets, it's going to hurt your car, your house, your student loan, your credit card debt. All of that stuff is going to suck, frankly.
Right. Well, and also this is the federal rate. I mean, this is, again, where I think private money is really sexy, you know, because, again, they're not governed by what the Fed says. So you can get private money any day of the week. Uncle Jim, if you talk to Uncle Jim and say, look, how would you like to do 3%? You know, I know you're making 2% right now in the stock market. Can I borrow some money from you at 3%? Well, and the national average is 5%. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the ability with private money to make any kind of interest rate you want. So you don't have to be governed by just what the Fed does with banks. You know, additionally, you have to weigh your options and decide whether or not it's something that you want to spend the money on. Again, if you're using, if you're able to get money in order to purchase investment property, then 5% is not a big deal. I mean, look at a home equity line of credit right now, about 4.99%.
Yeah, they're high.
They're high. And we also do not get the benefit any longer, thanks to the tax law changes, of a write-off or a business, interest deduction from a home equity line of credit for purchasing investment property. It's weird now, this caveat that only if you do capital improvements to your primary residence can you write off the interest.
Is that true?
That's true, which is crazy. So now with a HELOC, instead of being able to go out and buy an a business investment, you can't use that as a write-off, the interest deduction from a home equity line of credit. But you can use it if you make, you know, add an addition onto your primary residence, capital improvements to the house that you live in. It's a very narrow definition now, which is kind of crazy.
And so now the IRS is going to look for receipts on your home equity line of credit?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, and it's not normally the tax, you know, it would benefit investors. In this case, this narrow new adjustment, it's not.
I just wonder why they care. Like, why? What does this incentivize?
Well, also, it's you're funneling money into a liability.
Into an existing liability.
Right.
Right.
So you could take that money, that HELOC, and go out and buy 6 rental properties. I mean, using our home equity line of credit has been the number one, well, I think the number one way you and I have acquired rental properties.
Yeah.
It's our favorite. Has been. Because it's a rinse and repeatable way. It's a line of credit. So you have the tenant basically paying back your home equity line of credit. Now that interest is not a deduction. However, it does, you know, still, it's, even if that's not a deduction, still, and it's a minimal deduction at that, it's not crazy.
Right.
Still at 4.99%, if you're cash flowing 8% or 9% or 10%, or that's still a no-brainer.
And you're still depreciating that asset.
Right. It's still a tax shelter.
Claiming depreciation on an asset.
Right.
Exactly right.
So you're still adding to your net worth. You're still adding it as a tax shelter. To me, it's a no-brainer. So even if that interest rate goes higher.
Today's episode is brought to you by Betterment. It's the largest independent online financial advisor, and it's the service designed to help improve customers' long-term returns and lower taxes for retirement planning, building wealth, and other financial goals. We're talking about financial goals, right, on this today's episode, of course, so this is incredibly important. Betterment takes advantage of investment strategies and then uses the technology to deliver them to more than 300,000 customers. So why would I choose Betterment? Well, experts who have your back. And we believe you should be able to get financial advice anytime, anywhere. All Betterment customers can receive advice from the team of licensed financial experts through their mobile app's messaging feature. Betterment is a fiduciary. That means that they don't get commissions for recommending funds. Like if you want to have some of your money in some different funds in, you know, for a diversified portfolio, they don't make money off of that. And they don't have funds of their own that they try to cram down your throat. They do what they believe is right for you. Another reason I you know, these guys are great is they have low transparent advisory fees. So what that means is they only have a 0.25% annual fee. You've heard us talk about on the podcast all of those hidden fees that ends up, you know, you're paying financial advisors different. Different here with Betterment. So you know what you're getting up front. It's not hidden. It's transparent. And they have tax saving strategies to help increase your after-tax returns. So everything they do is designed to lower taxes, increase your returns. On average, Betterment's tax-coordinated portfolio can increase portfolio value by an estimated 15% over 30 years. And they've got great advice, too, that looks at all of your wealth. So if you've got real estate investing, which I hope you do, and you've got some money and some funds, Betterment can give you a clear view of your net worth. And when you sync your outside accounts, such as, you know, your Bank of America account or your Wells Fargo account, all of that stuff, and your other investments like your real estate investing, all tied under one roof, then Betterment can show you how much of your outside brokerage accounts may be costing you in fees. That's what we did. I mean, we found out that we had so many fees in these other brokerage accounts. And we, of course, stopped them immediately. We had to reposition our money and pull money out, but we didn't realize how much in fees we were paying. That's why technology has helped making it, you know, investing so much easier and better. And that's the beauty of Betterment. Here, you have to do this. Investing in Real Estate listeners can get up to 1 year managed free, totally free. For more information, visit Betterment.com/Clayton. That's betterment.com/Clayton. It's BETTERMENT, betterment.com/Clayton. I would love to use Betterment if I could, but since Betterment is a sponsor of the show, I'm not able to because of SEC regulations, unfortunately. Betterment can help you strive for higher returns. That's their goal. And it's a smarter, cheaper, more efficient way to invest. Check them out today and use that coupon code betterment.com/Clayton.
Another thing that we've done is get private lenders, not just like people we know, but, you know, smaller, non-regulated lenders, business lenders, and they are going to lend to you on the index. So the current rate of interest does affect what you're going to get for that product. But the more cash you have, the less you have to borrow from them, and then you get a more favorable interest rate. So for instance, on a loan we did 2 years ago, when rates were hovering around 4%, we were able to get a rate below 4% because we put a bigger chunk of cash into that deal. So instead of financing 80%, we financed 65%. So then now we're just going to pay less money for that money because we had a cash reserve. So, you know, we talk a lot about how you shouldn't just be saving your money. We don't mean you shouldn't save money. Of course, you should save money so that you're ready to take advantage of the market turns. We mean you don't save your money forever. Right? You save your money as a strategy. It's just one of many strategies.
Right. And so we had a question from a listener a few weeks ago, wanted to know, where do we put our temporary money? In some sort of like a little holding tank that we use to sort of then, we use it to then purchase and pounce on buying assets. Mm-hmm. We just bought a bunch of properties in New Jersey. We just bought additional properties in Michigan, one of our favorite markets. And we held it in, holding it in a certain account before we make that move. And you found a really good short-term savings account, right?
I did. This was actually a hard exercise that I went through because most savings accounts now are paying like 0.1% interest. Woohoo! It's really bad.
Oh, man.
They're not even paying a full point. It's like 0.01. I think of all the products we had currently, we were at 0.04 was the best we were doing. And that was an account that used to be ING, which then was bought by Capital One. And when we had it as ING, it was at 1%. But since we've had it for so long, they've at some point, I can't tell you when, dropped it to 0.4%. So obviously I wanted an account for our business where I can hold our tax money in. Mm-hmm. And I wanted a personal savings account. Now, you can't just take your business dollars and put it in your personal savings account because you're paying yourself into an account. How you use that, the government doesn't know, right? So that's a draw. So that's, if you're saying, oh, no, I'm not using that money. It's not company money. It's in my personal account. Well, that's illegal commingling. And then the government can come back and say, no, you put business money in your personal account. I want to tax it at your personal tax rate, not the more favorable corporate tax rate. So you have to keep business money in a business savings account and personal money in a personal savings account. So I went to look on bankrate.com where I compare most financial products. And for a business savings account, it's hard to even hit 1%. And the best I could do was a Capital One account, which is 1.1%, but it's only for 1 year. It's a Capital One Spark business account. And then after a year, it adjusts at 0.4%. So I'll either have to rethink it or maybe I'll go shopping for a new one. I'm not sure. It's not great. Now, what I did find is more favorable interest rates for personal accounts. I found a company called Marcus by Goldman Sachs, and it is Goldman Sachs, the big investment bank. And that's paying 1.5% in perpetuity. It does not change, but you're getting the trade-off of the fact that there are no banks. There's no physical presence of this bank. You can't do like checked picture deposits. It's only online. So online transfers, you can automate your online transfers and you can only call a call center. There's nowhere I can go to go into the bank. Now I'm fine with that because I'm very comfortable talking to bankers. Clayton sees me doing this all day, every day.
Right.
But that is your trade-off. And so now we're making 1.5% on our savings account, which I'm thrilled with. I'm actually really happy with them. We have no affiliation to tell you to use either product. But my point in telling you this story is that it's really important to keep shopping for the best place to put your money.
Yeah. And again, a temporary holding tank that you hold that cash in order to purchase, you know, a performing asset, whatever it happens to be. You buy real estate, you buy a business, you buy a laundromat. I don't know. Whatever you do, you buy gold, but buy a performing asset with that money that you keep in that short-term,
yep,
that short-term holding tank. So bottom line, yeah, interest rates are going up. They're going to go up again this year and again this year. So if you think about buying that primary residence, you know,
Do it yesterday,
right? Go out and get lock in a rate and start to purchase properties, or start to purchase your primary residence with that long-term, 30-year fixed rate right now. And it's going to happen again. We knew that this was coming, but we also see the sort of stabilization right now in the market, which is good. So maybe the supply may be starting to catch up with the demand, and then we'll have this nice little stabilization period across the country. So that's what we're looking at right now, 5% interest rates. Don't panic.
Don't panic. No, yeah. Just it's a part of your long-term strategy.
Remember when we were growing up, we hear stories about my parents with their mortgage, their interest rate was 18%.
Yeah.
Back when my parents bought their house in the early 80s, it was 18% interest rates to get a 30-year mortgage. Holy smokes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's anyone still paying off a mortgage from the 80s.
That did, I'm sure.
That has not refinanced.
That hasn't refinanced? I don't know. God forbid.
Right.
So there you go. Thank you so much for subscribing and downloading the show. We really appreciate it. We publish it multiple times per week. We try to bring you valuable insights from the current state of the market, like today, and also some broader strategies, whether it's taxes. What else do we talk about? We talk about family finances, all sorts of things.
All sorts of things. That's right.
That's right. So that's going to do it for the Investing in Real Estate show. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, everyone, go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. We'll see you next time, everyone.
Bye.